You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And, of course, it's Friday, so it's Brunch with Bernie, but it's a special brunch with Bernie. We have Bernie right here in the studio with us. Senator Sanders, it is an honor to have you in our humble space.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Thank you so much. What in your mind are the – I don't know if you know, we just got the breaking news. Paul Ryan got booed this morning at the AARP when he called for the end of Obamacare. But what do you see as the big issues of the day?
Well, I'll tell you. I think what has been transformative for the campaign – is that video that revealed. I think what Romney and the ruling class of this country in general believe. You know, it was a discussion among millionaire friends.
Yeah.
And when Romney gets up there and dismisses 47% of the American people, and when he lectures working families about personal responsibility and taking care of their own lives, when these are people, Tom, who have worked their entire lives, sometimes working 50 or 60 hours a week, raising their kids, in some cases serving in the military and defending this country. And now they are on Social Security, which they paid for. They're on Medicare, which they paid for. And they are lectured by this zillionaire-type guy about personal responsibility. I think that sends a very clear message to this entire country that Romney is part of a arrogant upper class that hasn't a clue about what's happening in America or has any respect for working families in this country. So I think that was a very significant development this week. The other thing that we are working on very hard is the issue of Social Security. Yesterday I held a press conference with Senators Begich, Whitehouse, and Franken, and we released a letter with 29 signatures on it, which says to our colleagues and to the president, do not cut Social Security. Social Security has nothing to do with the deficit because Social Security is funded by the payroll tax. Social Security has a $2.7 trillion surplus, can pay out all benefits for the next 21 years. Now, we know what the Republicans have in mind for Social Security. Their long-term plan is to privatize Social Security so their friends at Wall Street can make a huge amount of money in commissions, etc. Their short-term plan is to make significant cuts in Social Security. What worries me very much, Tom, is that 4 years ago, Barack Obama was pretty clear on this issue. And he said to John McCain, he said, John McCain wants to cut your Social Security. I do not. And in fact, he proposed a very good idea, which I translated into legislation, which says that if you lift the cap on taxable income, right now, as you know, a zillionaire, somebody's making $10 million a year, contributes the same amount of money into the Social Security Trust Fund as somebody makes $110,000. Mm-hmm. And what Obama said, which was absolutely right, you lift that cap, and then you start off at $250,000, and then you go on up.
Mm-hmm.
So millionaires start paying into the Social Security Trust Fund in a significant way. If you do that, Social Security will be solvent for the next 75 years. I thought what Obama said 4 years ago is exactly right, and frankly, I want to hear him say that again.
Yeah. Do you think that capital gains taxes should also be subject to Social Security deductions?
Well, that's an interesting point. Yes, long term, I suspect that's true, and we want to move there, but that would be a hell of a
more and more of these banksters are taking all their income the way Mitt Romney does as carried interest.
That's right. So in fact, so-called salaried income accounts for a very small percentage of these guys' real income.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
But right now, if you just do that, looking at income in the same way we do today, just do that, mm-hmm. you will make Social Security solvent for the next 75 years, which is what we must do. And the point that I have been making over and over again is that many people take Social Security for granted. We shouldn't. It is on the chopping block. It is under fierce attack from people like Pete Peterson and others who want to make significant cuts. And by the way, when we talk about approaches like the chained CPI, and many listeners don't know what that means.
Right.
What the chained CPI is an inside-the-beltway term developed by right-wing economists who make the argument that the way we determine cost-of-living adjustments, COLAs today, is too generous. It's too generous. Now, if you're a senior citizen out there, you're going to say these people are nuts. Because in the last 3 years, while the cost of prescription drugs and health care has soared, they only got one cost of living increase just this last year. So how could it be too generous? But what the right-wing economists want to do through this chain CPI is change how we formulate a COLA and make it less generous, which would mean over the next 10 years, if you're 65 today, if they got away with doing that, it would be a $560 cut. So imagine somebody earning $14,000, $15,000 in Social Security, $560 cut, and over a 20-year period, when you're 85, it would be $1,000.
Wow.
And, importantly, this does not only apply to seniors, it applies to veterans on VA disability benefits.
This is kicking all those people to dog food. I mean,
You tell me, if you're 65 now, and when you're 85, if this chain CPI goes through, which is being pushed very hard by Republicans and some Democrats, and this is what concerns me, but if that goes through, 20 years from now, when you're 85 years of age, and you're trying to live on $15,000 a year, they're going to take away $1,000 of your benefits. And to me, at a time when we have the most unequal distribution of wealth and income of any major country on earth, when the gap between the very, very rich and everybody else is growing wider, man, you do not balance the budget on the backs of seniors trying to get by on $15,000 a year. You do not balance the budget on the backs of disabled veterans, people who can't work today, people who are suffering because of their sacrifice for this country. That is not how you balance the budget. Mm-hmm. You ask large corporations, one quarter of which are not paying a nickel in taxes, to start paying their fair share of taxes. You take a heavy look, a hard look at military spending, which has tripled since 1997. You take a hard look at an issue that has not gotten the coverage that it needs, and that is these tax havens.
Mm-hmm.
What we do know from a study in the Senate is that we're losing about $100 billion a year from tax havens in the Cayman Islands, Bermuda, and elsewhere. The truth is it's probably greater than that. There's a study that came out a month or so ago suggesting that worldwide, not just in the United States, there's some $20 trillion being sheltered in tax havens around the world.
That's larger than the GDP of the United States.
$15
trillion.
Way larger.
Yeah.
So in other words, the rich are getting richer. They are paying the lowest effective tax rates in the modern history of this country. They're sheltering huge kinds of amounts of money in tax havens. Corporations are avoiding taxes through a whole variety of loopholes. And before you cut Social Security and benefits for disabled veterans, you look at those areas to raise the revenue we need to deal with the deficit.
Right. We have just a minute before the break. Other issues that you see front and center this
week? Well, I'll tell you something. There was a piece in the New York Times today which speaks to the war that is being waged against the working class of this country. Quite incredible. Mm-hmm. What this article talked about today is that life expectancy, how long we live, for white women without a high school diploma went down by 5 years. 5 years.
Wow.
Between 1990 and 2008. 2008 was when we had the Wall Street crash, so those numbers are probably even worse today. But a five-year decline in life expectancy for low-educated white women that's just off
this
the charts.
This is demonstrating the failure of Reaganomics.
It's demonstrating the failure of Reaganomics, and it's really demonstrating in a horrendous way the collapse of the working class in this country.
Yeah, very, very well said. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us in the studio today. He'll be taking your calls next on our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie, here on the Tom Hartman Program. 16 minutes past the hour. Check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. You can drop by ours. You can drop into our live chat room, in fact, and say hi at tomhartman.com. It's all free. I'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Your calls for Senator Sanders in our national town hall meeting coming up right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders in our national town hall meeting taking your calls. And Scott in Skowhegan, Maine. Scott, you are on the air with Senator Sanders. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network.
Hey, Tom, how are you? I haven't talked to you guys in a long time. Mr. Sanders, I would like to know if there's anybody who is seriously considering, like, tweaking NAFTA or possibly getting rid of the whole thing. Because it's a bad deal. And I keep hearing people say, oh, we're going to create these jobs, these, you know, 12 million jobs. Where are these jobs going to come from?
The answer, Scott, yes, is there are some people, unfortunately a minority of us, who are prepared to take a very hard look at our current trade agreements, which include NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement, CAFTA, Central American Free Trade Agreement, permanent normal trade relations with China, and other trade agreements. When I was in the House, all of corporate America came forward and they said, this NAFTA is going to be great, and CAFTA is going to be great, and trade with China is going to be great because you're going to be able to sell all of your products to these countries. Well, I mean, common sense suggested to me then, and the facts and the record suggests to everybody today, that these trade agreements have been significant failures. What they have enabled large corporations to do is shut down plants in America. And we have lost, and everybody should be aware of this, 55,000 factories in the last 10 years. Not all of them due to trade, but many of them due to trade. Because corporations say, why would I want to build a company in this country, expand manufacturing in this country, when I can go to China and other low-wage countries, build a plant there, bring my products back into the United States? That's what they say, and that is, in fact, what they have done. So, Scott, our goal, and it ain't easy, and I'm working hard on this, our goal is to demand that corporate America invest in this country, not in low-wage countries abroad. I'll give you one example of where we've had a limited amount of success. We have gotten some federal agencies, including the Smithsonian Institute, Great Museum, in their gift shops now to start significantly increasing the products that they purchase from the United States of America. And I just got a lovely email from a company in Vermont. We got to hear this from all over the country saying thank you, because now we're able to sell our products at the Smithsonian rather than products coming in from other countries. So it is an issue that we've got to focus on. We need to change our trade agreements. And in America, we need, once again, to be buying products made in the United States of America.
Larry in Louisville, Kentucky, listening on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you for taking my call, Senator Sanders. I have a question that I don't know is even a smart one, but is it possible for me to choose Social Security as my retirement fund of choice rather than invest it in a private account? So rather than paying in, say, 7.5%, say, could I add another 7.5%, and would that be of any financial benefit to me?
No, I think it probably wouldn't. What we have right now, except if you're self-employed, right now it's 6.2, Larry. You put in 6.2, and your employer puts in 6.2. And here's the story. When we talk about Social Security, we should not see it as an investment account. If people, you know, want to play Wall Street, they want to make investments, they have every right in the world to do that. And sometimes people do very, very well. Sometimes, such as when 2008 Wall Street crash came about, they lose their entire life savings. Social Security should be looked at as a very strong insurance program which has never once failed. Social Security for the last 77 years has paid out every nickel owed to every eligible American regardless of the state of the economy. It is an insurance program that since its inception has always been there. But it's not only for retirees. Larry, if you have a disability, if you incur a disability, Social Security is there. If the breadwinner in the family drops dead, then the wife and the kids get Social Security. So when you look at Social Security, don't see it as an investment. You want to get rich, don't invest in Social Security. Social Security's function is to always be there. Guaranteed benefits when you get old, if you get disabled, if the breadwinner in the family dies, so that the children will be able to have a decent income.
Okay. Diana in Galesburg, Illinois. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi. Bernie Sanders, you're the greatest. I just want you to know that. We love you here in the Illinois.
Thank you.
Anyway, I'm going to vote for the Green Party, and I was just wondering how this would affect the Democrats in Congress.
Okay, Diana, I understand why people would vote for the Green Party. They have some very attractive candidates, I think, who make a lot of sense. They're very good on the issues. So I can't argue with what those folks are talking about, because I tend to agree with much of what they say. What I would ask people to consider is this, is that if, say, in, well, I think Illinois is a fairly safe state, but in other states where Obama can lose by a few points if the Green Party candidates got a sizable vote, what it would mean to this country if Romney and Ryan took office. So my own view is I am strongly supporting President Obama, despite the fact, as I have stated on this show for a long time, I have some serious disagreements with him. I think he has not been as bold and as strong in a number of areas. But right now, my main fear is right-wing extremism and what happens to working families in this country if Romney and Ryan and their friends are elected.
And we have two members of the Supreme Court, Justice Kennedy, the swing vote, and Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a progressive,
right,
who are rather elderly and frail.
That's a long time. That is right. And so I think, Diana, my view, and I, you know, honest people disagree with me on this, is that we, the day after the election, the day after we reelect Obama, we have got to build a strong grassroots movement that puts enormous pressure on Obama to stand up for working families in this country.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour, a national town hall meeting here on the Tom Hartman program. Bernie taking your calls. Coming up, more of that coming up right after this break for news and your opportunity to support your local station. Check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov. You can drop by ours at tomhartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Back with more with Senator Sanders in just a moment. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And just a quick update. Welcome to a couple of new affiliates in Toronto, Canada. True Talk Radio has just picked us up. And also, we have a new TV affiliate in Lake Forest, Minnesota, now running a program. So greetings to all of you. It is our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. Not on the line. He's here in the studio.
On the line and in the studio.
Indeed. So let's pick up some of our calls here. John in Jeffersonville, Ohio, you are on the air, Senator Sanders.
Yes, Senator Sanders. My question is with regard to the I'm known as Liberal John. I'm proud of the word liberal. I'm not going to walk away from that. I'm proud of that. But a lot of the people I work with, they're deflated because Obama didn't live up to the illusion of what they wanted him to be. And I've kind of come to the conclusion that we've got a choice between Obama and Romney. And the Supreme Court appointees that Obama have made have been great. And that's what it's about. And we've got to suck it up and do what we've got to do. In your opinion, what do we need to do to energize the progressive base, to get them back involved, and to get over this, you know, whining and stuff?
John, that's a good question. And let me tell you what I think. In the real world, we have to understand what goes on. And right now, the big money interests have enormous influence over the political process. And one would be very, very naive not to believe that Barack Obama is subject to the pressures of Wall Street and big money guys. For example, one of my major criticisms of Obama is that he was not more aggressive in taking on the banks and Wall Street, which caused the terrible, terrible recession that we're in right now. I thought that the stimulus package that he proposed was a significant step forward in a terrible time in our economy, in creating millions of jobs and helping us move in a number of areas, energy, education, in the right direction. But we should have done more. I am a single-payer advocate, believe we should have a Medicare for all single-payer system. I voted for health care reform because it provides health care to another 30 million Americans, not insignificant. So here is my point, John. Barack Obama has not done all of the things that he should in standing up to right-wing Republican extremism. I think too often they've negotiated compromises in which the Republicans have come out a lot better than the Democrats have, despite the fact that on issue after issue, the vast majority of the American people support Barack Obama. I am very worried, as I mentioned earlier in this program, about what will happen to Social Security. Will Obama and his friends and the Democrats sit around after the election in some deficit reduction package and cut Social Security? Frankly, I worry about that because I haven't heard the president be as clear and strong on that issue as he should. But bottom line is this. Right now, everybody should understand that if Romney and Ryan and their friends are elected, there will be a war against the middle class and working class of this country, the likes of which we have never seen, not in our lifetimes. You're talking about throwing millions of people off of Medicaid, some of the lowest income people and children in this country, off of Medicaid, left out on their own without any health insurance. You're talking about the end of Medicare as we know it, and many, which means that many elderly people on Medicare will not be able to get the quality health care that they need. You're talking about cuts in Social Security and the movement toward the privatization of Social Security. You're talking about cuts in education at a time when too many of our neighbors and fellow Americans are living in hunger, major cuts in nutrition programs. All the while, they will give more and more tax breaks to the richest people in this country who are already doing phenomenally well. So, John, bottom line for me is, we have got to defeat right-wing extremism. We've got to defeat Romney and Ryan. We've got to reelect Barack Obama. But the day after this election, we have got to continue our efforts to grow a strong, progressive grassroots movement, rebuild the trade union movement in this country, which is undergoing all kinds of attacks, and then tell the president, Mr. President, you got to go forward in a progressive way. You got to start creating the millions of jobs that we need. You got to go stronger on health care. You got to go stronger on taking on and reversing global warming and transforming our energy system. So we have to reelect Obama, build that grassroots progressive movement, and make sure he starts listening to working families, not just the very wealthy.
Kathleen in Lacyville, Pennsylvania. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders, I just have to tell you, I am so thankful you were there. You have been my hero for years. I just wish I had you here in Pennsylvania, but I do support your campaign. I've been sending money, but I just have two questions. Number one, do you think we can ever get rid of Citizens United? Because that has distorted this country completely, our voting rights, and they're doing everything they can to block people from voting, which I can't believe they even have the nerve to talk about. It's horrible. And can we put pressure or try to lean on President Obama to come out and commit to not touching Medicare? I mean, he's running for re-election, and he will probably be more open at this time when he wants our vote than he will be after the election.
Well, Kathleen, thanks very much for your support, and you're right on both of your questions. And let me answer them. Can we... Everybody, I think, or I hope that most of the people who are listening or watching this show know what Kathleen is talking about in terms of Citizens United. Citizens United is a two-year-old Supreme Court decision, 5-4 decision, which said that corporations are people with First Amendment rights in terms of their ability to make campaign contributions. It is an unmitigated disaster in terms of, as Kathleen said, undermining American democracy and what this country is supposed to be about. The results of Citizens United are twofold. Number one, the billionaires are pouring huge sums of money into the political process, mostly against Obama and other progressives, Sherrod Brown and others around the country who stand up for working people. The second impact that Citizens United has is it intimidates members of Congress from standing up for working people and standing up to the big money interests because they're afraid that if they stand up, they're going to be subjected to huge amounts of campaign ads against them. So to answer Kathleen's questions, there are now at least 6 states in this country and hundreds of communities which have gone on record in saying we've got to overturn Citizens United. I And other senators, Tom Udall, among others, have introduced constitutional amendments to do just that. And Obama's people are beginning to talk about the need to go forward with a constitutional amendment, something I want them to do. We have got to wage a grassroots campaign in 50 states in this country to say Citizens United is not what America is about. People like the Koch brothers should not be spending $400 million on a campaign, and we have got to overturn that decision. In terms of Medicare and Social Security, you're right, Kathleen. Right now is the time to force the president to come on board and say, I will not cut Social Security. I will not cut Medicare. There are ways to do deficit reduction which are fair, which do not negatively impact the elderly, the sick, the children, and the poor. We have got to come forward with a progressive deficit reduction package. I talked about that a moment ago. But certainly it includes asking the wealthy and large corporations to begin paying their fair share of taxes.
Matt, in New York City, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Senator Sanders. I think the work you've been doing for us has been such a help in this fight against, all this stuff has been happening to the middle class and the lower class, and I appreciate your help. But I want to just ask you a question. What do you think about this fact that I think that that so much money has been basically sequestered in fewer hands progressively through the decades, that may be having a dramatic effect in terms of money that is available to circulate in the economy for the rest of us, that it's basically been, put aside, like dammed off, and not that plus the fact that it's being used to manipulate our own democracy. What do you think about that?
Well, I think you're exactly right, Matt, in both instances. What Matt is talking about is the incredibly obscene and unfair distribution of wealth and income in America. It is not talked about enough. I talk about it all of the time, but I want everybody to understand that you got one family today, one family, the Walton family from Walmart, that owns more wealth than the bottom 40% of the American people, one family. You have the top 1% owning 41% of the wealth of America. The bottom 60% owns 2.3% of the wealth of America. And that gap between the people on top who are phenomenally wealthy and who are doing extremely well, and everybody else is getting wider and wider and wider. And unless we address that issue, the obscene, unfair distribution of wealth and income in this country, I do not see how we're going to have the kind of economy that we need and the type of fairness that we need in a democratic society. And in fact, what I worry about is the movement of this country toward an oligarchic form of country where a handful of wealthy individuals control both the economy and the political life of the nation.
It is our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders here in the studio taking your calls on the Tom Hartman Program, our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. Check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov. You can drop by ours at tomhartman.com. Free Speech TV, freespeech.org. Check out your local radio station. They have websites as well. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit tomhartman.com for audio and video archives.
More with Bernie right after this.
We must be prepared to move forward in the implementation of these rights to new goals of human happiness and well-being. For unless there is security here at home, there cannot be lasting peace in the world.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour, our national town hall meeting with Senator Bernie Sanders and Jude in Madison, Wisconsin. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, it's lovely to speak with you. And Tom, I really look up to you as a role model. I'm currently reading Walking Your Blues Away.
Well, thank you.
My question is that I'm not sure about the protocol. Often I'd like to call into the president's hotline and say I'm a constituent, this is how I feel, or call a congressman and let them know about how I feel about a bill or please vote this way. But I'm not sure about the proper protocol.
Well, Jude, the protocol is pretty simple. You get, I mean, my office and every other office in the Senate and the House and the White House, we have people at the telephones all day long. And your job is, in fact, to make those calls. And I hope, I mean, the issue that I've been focusing a lot of energy on lately is Social Security. And I hope, by the way, that millions of Americans, people listening to or watching this show, will call up the White House, will call up their congressperson, their senator, and say, do not cut Social Security. It has not contributed to the deficit. It has a surplus. It is enormously important. Let's get on the phone. Because I'll tell you, if millions of people do not start moving on this issue and demand that Social Security be protected and that there be no cuts, and the veterans organizations have got to get involved in this issue, because when you cut Social Security, you're likely cutting veterans' benefits as well. And if millions of people do that, they will not cut these benefits. But, Jude, please get on the phone, and it's pretty simple. I think, actually, you have a direct line
here. We have a website called callcongress.org, and it's got a couple of 800 numbers that take you to Congress plus the regular number to right into the switchboard.
And it's really, just go to the Internet. It is not hard to find out who your senator is, who your congressperson is. Call them up. They have 800 numbers, and let them know how you feel.
Yeah, there you go. Let's see here. Kim in Morrisville, Indiana. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'd probably get my crazy ideas because I was born and raised in Vermont, St. Albans. But anyway, I just have this really deep fear and feeling, and I want to know if Mr. Sanders agrees. I believe the reason why Mr. Rove is backing Romney so hard is so that he can have another intellectually challenged individual so that he can be president by proxy. Now, I hope I'm wrong. I don't think I am, though, and I'm concerned about it. I'm hoping that Romney is so unappealing that Mr. Obama can get in. I am voting for Mr. Obama again. I just want to know what you think, Mr. Sanders.
Well, Kim, I think that Karl Rove is a very, very smart guy. Karl Rove is playing a huge role in this campaign. By raising hundreds of millions of dollars. What's it called? Crossroads is his organization.
Yeah, GPA, yeah, Crossroads.
He has taken advantage of the Citizens United decision, raising hundreds of millions of dollars and targeting that money to where the Republicans need it the most, certainly is of enormous help to Mitt Romney and Mr. Ryan. And if Romney gets elected, I have no doubt at all but the Karl Rove will be there as, either officially or unofficially, as a significant player in the Romney team. And where Karl Rove has been, unfortunately, if I may say so, very, very smart and very effective, is that he, does a lot of polling and a lot of analysis of the American public. And his main job in life is to have working people vote against their own best interest. That's where he is a genius in developing wedge issues. So you have a family out there where the guy has lost his job because it went to China. The Republicans want to throw their kids off of Medicaid. They want to prevent their kids from getting federal assistance to get a college education, and they're going to come up with the issue. Maybe it's gay rights or gay marriage. Maybe it's the abortion issue. Maybe it's a gun issue, whatever it may be. They will come up with that issue to have people vote for somebody who is representing the wealthiest people in this country and not that family's interest. And that's what they do. And that's Karl Rove's genius. He does it very well. And we have got to fight against that by saying, look, in this world, all of us have our differences of opinion. Yeah, I am pro-choice. Other people may not be. I believe in my state we passed gay marriage. I'm proud of that. Other people may disagree. But on basic economic issues of whether we have to create millions of jobs in this country, whether we have to change our trade policy, whether health care is a right of all people, whether we protect Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, whether we ask the rich and large corporations to start paying their fair share to do deficit reduction, the vast majority of the American people support those propositions. And we cannot allow ourselves to get sliced and diced by Karl Rove and other right-wing advisors. We have got to my mind, come together and make sure this government works for all of us and not for just the people on top.
Bernie, we just have about a little less than a minute and a half, not enough time, to get another caller in. Your thoughts on what people can and should be doing?
Well,
and
I think
a
few moments ago, Jude raised an issue, and sometimes, you know, sitting on in the Senate, sometimes I assume that people know this, and maybe they don't. The fact is that every member of the United States Senate, every member of the United States House of Representatives has an 800 phone number, often to their local offices. And we have that in Burlington, Vermont. You can get on the phone, call them up, and make it very clear how you feel about the important issues facing working people. And I would hope that we would focus right now on telling the president and telling every senator, every member of the House, do not cut Social Security, do not cut Medicare and Medicaid. There are ways to move to deficit reduction which are fair, which do not assault people who are already suffering as a result of this recession. And if millions of people make those calls and let these senators and let the president know that we are watching, we can win this fight.
Yeah. And you're optimistic. I'm actually, frankly, I'm wondering if this is going to be a Goldwater year. We'll see.
I don't want to speculate, but yeah. I think, you know, at this point, the bomber is going to go.
Yeah. Well, it is 47 days out, so we got
a long time remaining.
Senator Sanders, thanks so much for being with us, and thanks for being in here.
My pleasure.
Thank you. It's always an honor. We'll be back with Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you live from Washington, D.C. It's a beautiful Friday here. One of the cool things, I've lived in the South. I lived in Atlanta for, I think, 13 years. Lived in the North. I grew up in the Midwest, in Michigan. Lived in Vermont. Lived in New Hampshire. But now living in the kind of middle and lived in Portland, Oregon, where it's kind of, you know, a moderate climate most of the time. But here in Washington, D.C., it's fascinating, this kind of middle point, the Mason-Dixon line almost, where, you know, when I lived in New Hampshire and Vermont, it was like, what was the local joke in Vermont? We have 9 months of winter and 3 months of bad sledding. And down in Atlanta, it was, you know, 9 months of summer and 3 months of rain. And but here, it's like really remarkable how long spring and summer are. They're just beautiful, beautiful seasons. Although we have been getting just wild, wild weather, wild storms. So I Louise and I, and in fact we raised our kids in Atlanta. We lived in Atlanta for 13 years, and during that time that I lived down there back in the 80s, Senator Max Cleland was our senator. And I remember a really nasty campaign that I regularly get really ripped about on the radio, but we're not going to go there right now. Senator Cleland is with us right now, and on behalf of the Barack Obama campaign, barackobama.com. Senator Cleland, I have to tell you, sir, it is an honor to speak with you. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Tom. You mentioned the old days. those days are gone. But what we have now is about 2 million Iraq and Afghan veterans returning to this country, and they need this country to take care of them. We send them to war to take care of them when they come back. That's a moral obligation, not just a political obligation, but a moral obligation. But what to tease me off and why I'm angry and why I'm on their program is just a few days ago, the Senate Republicans killed the Veterans Job Corps bill. Can you imagine in an economy such as ours, where the unemployment rate for veterans is some 11%, higher than the national average, the Republicans choose to kill the Veterans Job Bill? Now, that job bill was modeled after the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, where my father served in the throes of the Great Depression. Hmm. And it prepared him for his life. He learned a skill. And it helped him become a better Navy enlisted man at Pearl Harbor after the attack. So I'm all for the Veterans Job Corps bill, and so is the president. The Republicans killed it, which just goes to show you that nothing is sacrosanct to this politics of destruction. I think it is not just obstruction, but destruction. But we got to move this country forward. We got to take care of our troops, and I think the American people are seeing who's going to do that and who's not.
And you are uniquely qualified to speak to that, sir. I, you know, for our listeners, perhaps our younger listeners who aren't familiar with your political history and your life history, you left three limbs on the ground in Vietnam, if my recollection is correct, sir.
Right.
And I mean, you know, an honorable and honored, decorated and disabled veteran of as my grandfather was a member of the DAV, the Disabled American Veterans, of you know, our wars here in the United States. You can speak to veterans issues in a way that people who have not served in the military just do not have the right to speak to. Enough said, I suppose. But so. Well, what are your thoughts on, you know, historically, my Republican dad used to always refer to the Democrat wars, you know, the World War One and World War Two, and the Democrats won the wars, right? But largely since the Reagan years, for some bizarre reason, people have thought that the Republicans are the ones who are successful at standing up for the military, and the Democrats haven't been. It doesn't seem to me like anybody could make that charge against President Obama, that he has not supported our troops.
Not now. It was Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld, this guy, and Condi Rice, that crowd, that got us into Iraq on the specious notion that there was somehow weapons of mass destruction there.
Right.
That was not true. It was a false premise. President Barack Obama has ended that war and brought those 160,000 troops home. Now he is ending the Afghan war while at the same time having taken out Osama bin Laden that did come against us on 9/11. So the real challenge for the next president, which is what the choice that the American people have to make November 6th is, who's going to be the next president, the real challenge is who is best able to take care of the 2 million veterans, male and female, coming home.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Republicans killed the Veterans Job Corps bill in the Senate, that would have created a situation where you use the technical skills that these veterans have picked up in the military and use them back here to rebuild this country. When they kill that's crazy.
Yeah.
So I think it's more and more clear who's going to take care of our veterans and who's not.
Well, and it seems that there's a component of just pure politics to this, because there are a number of Republican senators who actually participated in the writing of this piece of legislation, this Veterans Job Bill that failed a Republican filibuster. It actually got 56 or 58 votes in the Senate? Something like that?
58 votes in the Senate, which means that the Republicans not called some point of order, this thing would have glided through.
Right.
And Harry
Reid,
the majority leader, said this was a new low in the Senate. Can you imagine killing a bill that enables this country to put veterans back to work after they've come home from fighting our wars abroad? That's insane.
Yeah.
So the American people are seeing this clearly, I think, more and more. And it's one reason why I'm so agitated and why I'm so upset, that the politics of obstruction is more and more becoming the politics of destruction with the lives of our veterans. They don't need any more of that. They had plenty of that on the battlefield. Coming home is a battlefield enough, and negotiating your way into the job market is one of the toughest things to do. Why not have a little government help here to make sure that the skills you learn in the military transfer back here, and you're part of the Veteran Job Corps? I think that makes sense. Also, using the GI Bill, which the president has pushed, is one of the best ways to readjust back in this society. For those that are concerned about the deficit, as a former head of the VA, I can tell you The GI Bill, for every dollar spent on the GI Bill, $3 to $5 is returned to this country in the form of taxes, which helps our economy and cuts down the deficit. So this is an investment, not only in our veterans now, but in our future too, economically for them and, in terms of our own deficit here.
Yeah, and we, in just in the final minute, we have, there were four senator, Republican senators at least, who actually helped write this bill and then voted against it, apparently because the Republican leadership decided, let's not give President Obama anything that makes him look good.
Maybe they were for it before they were against it.
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead.
Politics of obstruction.
Yeah.
Which is becoming more and more the politics of destruction. It's destroying our country. And then just, you know, wiping the nose off to disfigure your own face. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So we're coming down to the lick log here. The American people are going to make a choice. And I think more and more the American people are seeing these parties clearly and seeing the president more as not just commander-in-chief, but as someone who is leading the fight now to take care of the troops when they come home.
Yeah, absolutely. Former Senator Max Cleland of Georgia, my former senator, former head of the Veterans Administration. Sir, it's been an honor speaking with you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be back. It's Anything Goes Friday. We'll be taking your calls on the topic of your choice, although I've got a few short rants to share with you over the next hour and 45 minutes as well. So stick around. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with Anything Goes Friday. It's a beautiful day here in D.C. Back with more right after this.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows, anything goes.
I'm telling you, there is a cycle to American politics. And in my humble opinion, people figured out in 1929 that three consecutive Republican administrations, Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover, had brought about the great crash of 29, the housing bubble crash of 28, the stock market crash of 29, and the Great Depression of 1930 through 33. They figured that out. And they brought somebody in who could do something about it, Franklin Roosevelt. And Americans are again figuring out 30 years of Reaganomics. Three Republican administrations. Once again, only this time it was Reagan, Bush, and Bush. The three Republican administrations have done so much damage to this country that I'm beginning to think this election might be a Goldwater election. You know, where Barry Goldwater ran as a right-wing extremist, and America just said, no, thank you. And the Republican Party, I remember, you know, my dad in 64, after that, you know, November, December of 64, I was 13 years old. After that election, he was shattered, as were his Republican buddies. They were like, you know, is this going to be the end of the party? I mean, are the Whigs going to rise up? And then Nixon came along, finally won an election, and then he gets impeached, and his attorney general gets sent to prison, and they were, oh no, this is it all over again. So it may be happening again. And here's one of the leading indicators. Paul Ryan this morning went to the AARP. It's about 10 blocks from where I'm sitting right now to give a talk. Actually, I'm not sure if he went to the Washington, D.C. office. Do you know, Shana, where it was? It might have been someplace else, but whatever it was sponsored by the American Association of Retired Persons. And Paul Ryan came in to tell them what's so. Here's how it went.
The first step to a stronger Medicare is to repeal Obamacare because it represents the worst of both worlds. I had a feeling there would be mixed reactions, so let me get into it. It weakens Medicare for today's seniors and puts it at risk for the next generation. First, it funnels $716 billion out of Medicare to pay for a new entitlement we didn't even ask for. Second,
I mean, you kind of get what's going on, right? I mean, it's like he's like, wait a minute, let me give you my right wing talking points. Why, you know, when I'm talking to right wing crazy, you know, when I'm talking to the Tea Party, that's, you know, the DeGarmi is organized. Nobody's booing at me. I don't understand what's going on. It's a what's with you old people? It's like, oh man, when the demographic from which the Tea Party is derived, which is basically over 50 white people. Oh, and this was an AARP meeting down in New Orleans. So it wasn't down the road from here. It was the headquarters of AARP is down the road from here. But when the when the group from which the Tea Party has been derived, which is over 50 white people, when they start booing you and you're running for vice president of the United States, and you're also simultaneously, by the way, running for re-election to the House of Representatives from the state of Wisconsin, and not doing so well, I think it's a clue that America is ready for a change. So, anyhow, we'll see. Bill, in Clifton, New Jersey, listening to WWRL. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? I'd just like to first say where I'm coming from. I'm severely dyslexic, and I have ADD, so I have a different point on the world. You know, mm-hmm. I see things a little bit different. I see the trees and the forest at the same time.
Great.
I called you back in June and said to you that Romney's going down and that this whole money ball is not going to amount to anything, and that the corporatists are going to realize how much money they lost on this whole deal. And that's what's going to happen.
Right, and when you said that, I poo-pooed it and said, no, that money is going to really kick butt. Yeah.
Set in your dreams, right?
Yeah, yeah, okay. And we'll see. I think you may be right.
Well, listen to this. When it's over, Obama will have no legion to big corporate money because they gave it all to Romney.
Yeah.
So it'll be even better.
It'll be payback time.
It'll be real payback time. We'll be able to do some real body slams and, you know, get things going again. I see good things, you know. Romney just is a sow of the year. That's all he is.
Yeah.
And he does everything by default, without a plan.
Yep.
He's nowhere.
Yeah, that was my point yesterday, is that I think that he believes that he's divinely guided, and it's his destiny to be president of the United States, and that's why he doesn't need a plan, because God's going to tell him at every step of the way what to do, and everything that happens is what's supposed to happen. Although his wife is telling all of the conservatives to just shut up and stop it. So I don't know. We'll see. Bill, thank you for the call. Well said. Jason in Washington, D.C., a minute to the break. Jason, what's up?
Hey, real quick, you know, I'm just any of these people that are on here, all I know is this: if Obama gets elected or Romney gets elected, I'm going to have less civil liberties, because Obama, under his administration, he signed NDAA. Bernie Sanders, who was on Easy earlier, was one of the seven guys that voted against us.
Yep.
This country's gone bonkers. Okay, this warrantless wiretaps, the NSA is now focusing
on. Well, now
that.
You have, you know, Chris Hedges and others just came out and sued against this and got it knocked down, although a court has reinstated
right,
it. We'll see where this goes.
So where does Obama stand on this? You know what he stands for? More control.
Well, frankly, he hasn't said. The administration hasn't issued
He signed it.
Oh, I know that. But since it's been knocked down.
That violates the presidential oath.
Yeah. Okay.
Support and defend the Constitution, right?
Well, you could argue that. You could argue also that the in order to sign that, I mean, that was part of the defense authorization package, that if you wanted to continue to have the military functioning, that he had been put in a corner and he had to sign this thing. So, you know, if you want, yes, you could say, okay, I'm being an apologist for a lousy policy. I am hopeful, frankly, that Obama will come out against this, that he will become a constitutionalist after the election, and that the lawsuit will
begin. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
But whatever the case may be, and I know that the Republican strategy right now is to get people to call into talk shows and mention NDAA or other small things that Obama's done. I think Obama's going to win. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 35 minutes past the hour in our chat room. Apparently it was Beach who came up with the phrase mitwit. Yes, Harry Ashburn saying, who named him mitwit? Beach says, I called him mitwit. I'm not sure who came up with that, but you know that Mitt Romney is in trouble. When Herman Cain, I'm not making this up, Herman Cain comes out and says, if I was the nominee right now, I would be winning. Why? And I quote, the reason is quite simple. I have some depth to my ideas. End quote. This is your fellow Republican nominee for President of the United States, or not nominee, a contender in the primaries for President of the United States, Herman Cain, arguing that Mitt Romney is failing because he has no depth in his ideas. As Paul Ryan gets booed, you know, somebody shouted, you lie at him. It's great at an AARP meeting. That's incredible. Sherry in Des Moines, Iowa. Hey, Sherry, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I have an idea that might help bring people together.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that both Republicans and Democrats are against is our rising deficit.
Mm-hmm.
During World War II, the government sold war bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped make everybody feel like they had a stake in the war.
Yep.
And why couldn't the government issue deficit bonds and have them be available for everybody at the post office or their banks, where they could go in and buy bonds at different increments and have them be long-term bonds,
right,
where the government wouldn't have to pay back out immediately,
mm-hmm,
and would only go for reducing the deficit?
Well, the problem is it wouldn't reduce the deficit.
Hold people together.
It wouldn't reduce the deficit. The only way you can reduce the deficit that way is if people gave that money to the Treasury without ever expecting to get it back. If you're buying a bond, what you're doing is you're buying an IOU from the government, and that's how the government finances the deficit. So you're right. The war bonds, you know, our deficit was over 100% of GDP by the end of World War II. We borrowed an enormous amount of money, largely from our own citizens. In fact, maybe exclusively from our own citizens. I've never gone back and looked at the composition of the debt at the end of World War II, but I would guess it was probably close to 100% U.S. citizens financed World War II. We had an enormous debt, 127% of GDP at the end of that war. But, you know, people were enthusiastic about helping America win the war. So they bought the bonds because, you know, yes, we need another tank or we need another bomber or whatever. But I don't think the people are so enthusiastic right now about, yes, we need to finance, we need to pay, you know, for the debt or for the big military or for the deficit that was run up by Reagan, Bush, and Bush. And really, those were the three administrations that were responsible for the policies that established this debt, for the, you know, two unfunded wars, for the Medicare donut, for, you know, Ronald Reagan with his Star Wars, George W. Bush, you know, with the two wars, the Medicare Part D, and you know, the crash in the income, the economy. So, I get your point, Sherry. Wouldn't it be wonderful if there was some way that we could all kick in and help out? I think the way to do that is to become politically active, mm-hmm, and get progressives out there and get progressives more involved. Sherry, thank you for the call, though, and, you know, thanks for what you said. Carla in Pueblo, Colorado. Hey, Carla, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to remind people that the unemployment rate would be lower if it wasn't for the record amount of filibusters by, mm-hmm, Republicans. And also, I think there should be some kind of amendment or whatever for politicians or people running for politics, not to be able to blatantly lie to the American people.
Yeah, here's the problem, though. How do you define a lie? I mean, there are a lot of areas where you can say, you know, Republicans can say, well, we really believe that if we give a lot of tax breaks to the rich, they get about 40% of all the tax breaks. You know, poor people get very few tax breaks. If we give a lot of tax breaks to the rich, then eventually it'll trickle down to everybody. And some of them might actually believe that. So for them, it's not a lie.
That's a hard one, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is a tough one. And that's why historically, Americans, both at the policy level and, you know, even the Supreme Court level, have said the one area where we're going to give the greatest latitude to, you know, the government not trying to come in and decide what's the truth and what's not the truth. Because there are truth in lending laws. There are truth in advertising laws. There are truth in commerce laws or variations thereof. But there are no truth in politics laws. And the reason why is
not even in advertising.
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah. Political advertising is exempt. If you were to run an ad for Viagra and say, oh, and by the way, not only does it do, you know, whatever it does for ED, but it also, you know, will make you live 30 years longer. You know, assuming that's not the case, you would be shut down, you know, as a drug company or, you know, for whatever the drug may be. But if you run an ad for a politician and say, you know, this guy is, you know, better than sliced toast, you know, he's the best thing ever, and he's, well, if you tell a lie, you know, this politician, you know, mm-hmm. Scott Brown never voted against the people of Massachusetts. Well, how do you know? Right. I mean, you know what? So that's the problem, Carla. Carla, thank you very much.
People just need to be more informed.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That is the answer. Transparency, knowing where the money came from, who's paying for the ads, and informing people in general. And that's one of the problems with our media. Thank you, Carla, for the call. This is one of the big problems with our media since Reagan did away with the Fairness Doctrine, which said that in order for radio and television stations to keep their licenses and by extension for cable systems to keep their cable, you know, cable throughways in the public right of ways, and wireless systems to have, you know, to use the airwaves, that in order to do that, in exchange for that use of the public commons, they had to actually perform, you know, programming in the public interest, which meant having real news at the top of the hour. And that went away, and the news has become infotainment. It's really tragic. Jim in Toledo. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Yeah. Hi, Tom. As you know, Mitt Romney released his returns here a short time ago. And
well,
showed him
no,
having,
he actually released a summary that explains his returns, but he's not actually releasing any of the details.
No, he released where he showed his charitable deductions, but he only took a percentage of those deductions,
right,
which put him at his 14.9%.
Right.
And what will stop him from next year filing an amended return to get his money back?
Nothing. He can do that. He can do that, I think, for 3 years. I may be wrong, but
right, three years. So this shows he's really not being honest with his tax returns.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't take a deduction that he was entitled to that would have dropped him below 14% last year. And I agree with you. Next year he will just amend his return.
They figured it out. If he would have took his full deduction, it would have been about 9.4%.
Oh, really? Yeah, I have yet to dig these broke just as I was going on the air, so I have yet to dig into them. But that, you know, makes perfect sense, and we can't have that. So, you know, I'm running for president for Pete's sake. It's right. Jim, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for illuminating the issue. And Malcolm in Park Forest, Illinois. Hey, Malcolm, what's on your mind today? Thanks for listening to WCPT.
Two ladies have my brain going a million miles an hour because they gave two very good suggestions.
Who's this?
The two ladies that were talking about, you know, the buying the treasury bonds, and the other lady was talking about, she made her point about free speech enabling these people to lie.
Yep.
Well, didn't the judge say you have free speech, but you can't holler fire in a crowded theater?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so if we could approach it on that way, in other words, in the federal elections, there has to be some limit on people telling out and out outrageous lies that have not been verified. And when you show a pattern of doing that, there should be some way to deal with that, to call them on that.
Well, we have a way to deal with that, Malcolm, and it worked for most of American history, and it was called the Fourth Estate. And it was referred to as the Fourth Estate because, you know, the first three estates were the legislative branch, the executive branch, the judicial branch, and then the Fourth Estate was the press. And the press just, you know, the press used to be, there used to be 10, you know, and when Reagan came into office, there were over 10,000 independently owned newspapers in the United States and right, over 1,000 independently owned radio and television stations in this country. Today, there are 4 or 5 corporations that own virtually all of that.
Yeah, that's the problem. So before I get to my main point, I've made one. The lady who talked about buying the bonds,
yeah,
why not use that money to create jobs? use our own tax money to form some ways that we can help create jobs for.
Well, this is what the Senate voted down yesterday. It was jobs for veterans, but it was jobs.
Yeah,
you know,
we buy these bonds.
Pardon? Oh, Malcolm just vanished. I think his cell phone croaked in mid-call there. And yeah, poor Shano, it went off in his ear. It went off in mine, too, but not quite so loud. But anyhow, it is Anything Goes Friday. We just have a couple of seconds here until this break is going to hit us. So I will pick up more of your calls right after this. But, yes, Mitt Romney has released not his tax returns for the last 20 years, but an explanation, a summary, a paper that he says, trust me, this is what I would have paid. This is what I did pay. Here's, you know, but just trust me because I'm not going to show you the details. You're not going to get to know if I took advantage of a tax haven or why I have accounts and why he has accounts in the Cayman Islands and Switzerland. None, you know, all those questions, they're not going to get answered.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Instead, he's saying, hey, I paid 14% in federal income taxes. Well, wait a minute. Doesn't that make him awful close to that 47% he doesn't like?
Ain't that good news? Man, ain't that news?
Oh, we're going to check our news in just a second. But first, Shano is just so good at digging out the details. What is this? Thomas Woodrow Wilson, so Woodrow Wilson went by his middle name, and Stephen Grover Cleveland, so Grover Cleveland went by his middle name. So, you know, the people who are thinking Mitt using his middle name is a little odd, you know, it's not so odd. We've had at least two presidents who've done the same thing. The Talk Radio News Service Report is brought to you by the efforts to free America's newest political prisoner. Former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman signed the petition asking President Obama to pardon Don Siegelman at donsiegelmanibefore.org. And please do so. This is really important. Get over to donsiegelman.org and sign that petition to President Obama to pardon Don Siegelman. It is so wrong that this man is in prison simply because he upset Karl Rove. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Victoria, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Tom. Very good.
Thank you so much for being on our program today. What's going on in the world?
Well, a lot of Washington-based news today. Mitt Romney is releasing his 2011 tax returns today. We don't have the details yet, but I think it'll be surprising if there's a lot of Cayman Islands stuff in it. It's interesting that he's picked Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock, the week of the 47%, because he'd originally said that they would come out before October the 15th. So he had an option to release them at any point. But today is the day, and that is the hour. So they're out. He paid $1.95 million in taxes on his investment income of $13.7 million. He paid an effective federal tax rate of 14.1% in taxes. Now, he said he paid at least 13% in federal income tax in each of the last 10 years. And in order for that claim to be true last year, he actually had to voluntarily take a smaller deduction than he was entitled to for his charitable deductions.
Which means that next year he'll file an amended return and get that money back.
Precisely. In fact, he probably could have paid between 11 and 12% in taxes this year.
Wow. I had a caller who had done the math and said it could be as low as 9%, but, you know, 11 to 12, that's still.
Yeah, no,
you know,
your Ezra Klein's are reckoning about 11 to 12%.
Yeah, so he's getting into the neighborhood of being a member of the 47% here.
If he keeps going this way.
Yeah. Yeah. You think?
That's correct. Yes, that's correct.
Oh, my. Poor Willard.
So this is where we are, and we're waiting to see the details of that. Congress. Mm-hmm. Is almost out. The House is don't slam the door on its back. But mm-hmm. before it went, there was an effort today to relaunch the Congressional Civility Caucus just 46 days before Election Day by Representative Shelley Moore Capito from West Virginia and Emmanuel Cleaver, that's bipartisan, from Missouri. He of the Satan sandwich. He does admit that he's had the odd lapse. Now, interestingly, the Civility Caucus, founded in 2005, only has 14 members, although the Congressional Wine Caucus has over 200 members. So you get a sense of where members of Congress put their importance.
Fascinating. What's the Satan sandwich?
Do not remember the Satan sandwich. That was wonderful, the Satan sandwich. Emmanuel Cleaver referred to, and of course my page won't turn, but I will make it so. It was, he called the bipartisan deal to raise the debt limit a Satan sandwich.
Oh, my. I did. Somehow that one slipped by me.
Yes.
That's amazing.
It was priceless.
Yeah.
And then later he said it was sugar-coated, because he does try to be polite.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So the House is basically out the door. The Senate, however, is in, being held up by two things. One, it stopped voting yesterday afternoon so that it could allow Scott Brown to go and debate Elizabeth Warren.
Right, where he never once mentioned Willard Romney.
Or that's correct.
Or the fact that he was a Republican, yes.
And two, Senator Rand Paul, who is holding up the proceedings unless, he's going to run out the clock, basically, unless he's allowed a vote on cutting off aid to Pakistan, Egypt, and Libya.
Whoa. Now, yeah. You know, what's interesting is in Benghazi today, thousands of people poured into the streets to demonstrate in favor of the United States and against the militia that murdered Ambassador Chris Stevens.
Which they did after Chris Stevens died also, and you
yes.
didn't see that on American television.
No, but I mean, this is a big deal. This afternoon, there was this massive demonstration in Benghazi. I mean, you know, and this is a little city in Libya, in favor, you know, it wasn't so much a pro-U.S. demonstration as it was an anti-militia, you know, calling for the disbanding of the crazies, you know, give up your guns and let's go back to being a normal society.
They don't like the crazies, and they loved Chris Stevens.
Yeah, yeah, apparently
he loved him as a human being.
Well, he spoke Arabic.
As an ambassador.
Yeah, he spoke their language, he knew their culture, he was a decent man.
He was a decent man. He was with them through the revolution. He worked with them.
Yes.
And they remembered that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So back to the Senate. Anyway, they may not get out of there until Sunday, because if they have to have this vote on aid, Harry Reid says he's going to keep senators into next week to force votes on legislation to loosen regulations for hunting and fishing on federal land. And that's to help Montana's John Tester, who's the only Democratic incumbent in a toss-up race for re-election.
Wow. Is Rand Paul doing this because he wants to hurt John Tester, or is he doing it because he's trying to pick up his father's mantle of being the contrarian who yells, you know, get off my lawn?
He's Rand Paul from outer space, and he's not popular in the Senate because he doesn't behave like a freshman.
Or a senator.
He's a grandstander.
Yeah.
People think he's a grandstander, and he does this, and senior senators do not like his behavior.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of senior senators, the senator from New York yesterday, Chuck Schumer, said that he's been talking to some Republican senators who are saying that if Mitt Romney loses and Barack Obama wins, that they are looking forward to saying goodbye to Mitch McConnell or ignoring him and starting to collaborate with Democrats. Is that true?
Yes. He also believes that there are going to be Tea Party losses, which will also contribute to collaboration.
Very, very interesting. Very interesting. Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
And get over to donsiegelman.org and sign the petition to free America's political prisoner.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
That's incredible. Paul Ryan, speaking of the AARP, says, President Obama has put his own job security above your retirement security. And all these retired people at the AARP meeting down in New Orleans, they all go, boo! It's absolutely incredible. There's a clip over at Daily Kos that's been edited down to the highlights or lowlights, the boo lights. The boo lights. Here, actually, I can play this out of my computer, Shane. Oh, you can just let me just pick up this little piece. We've already played the first part of it, but this is the Daily Kos version. Here you go. Let me just first turn it up a little bit. Here.
You don't have to take my word for it. You don't have to take my word for it.
Yes, you do.
Boo.
He's put his own job security over your retirement security.
Boo. That's incredible.
Of course, he said he'd be willing to work with Republicans, but he has not moved an inch closer to common ground. We're also going to repeal Obamacare and replace it with real reform.
They're just not buying it.
Thank you.
You know?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm getting the heck out of here. Can you imagine? I mean, I've given a lot of speeches in my life. I have given speeches on four continents over the last, well, who knows how many years. And I've never, you know, I've had people, you know, heckle me and things, but can you imagine an entire audience booing at you? I mean, it must be. And when you're running for vice president of the United States and knowing this is going to be the clip on the news tonight, oh man, it's got to be bad. I mean, it's really got to be bad. D in St. Charles, Illinois, listening to us on WCPT in Chicago. Hey, D, what's on your mind?
I'm still laughing at that last clip you played. I had a question, Tom.
Uh-huh.
I read an article on the Telegraph, which is, you know, a UK paper, mm-hmm. I guess a Tory paper,
yeah.
That was about Romney's time as governor in Massachusetts. There were two things that I was struck by because I hadn't read anything, seen anything. The first one was that Tobin Ryan, Paul's mm-hmm. brother, worked for Bain Capital at one time. I think it was around 2002. And I didn't realize that there was any relationship between those two families.
Huh.
And the second
I didn't know that either.
Was,
that's remarkable.
Right. And they made it very clear that Tobin Ryan now works for a company, nothing to do with Bain. You will not find Bain on his resume or his curriculum vitae. He doesn't mention it.
That's
the second thing was that while Tobin was involved with Bain, he got contracts for a Bain subsidiary. I think it was called Imaginata.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically Romney still had extensive involvement with his company in terms of investments, and that boiled it down to, while Romney was governor of Massachusetts, he benefited from state contracts given to Bain subsidiaries,
yeah.
Which is against the law. Now, I'm not
Whoa.
Saying that he's, you know, he probably didn't do his due diligence. He probably has investments that he doesn't even know what companies.
Sure.
But I just thought it's interesting that I haven't seen anything. I do my best to try and keep up, but I haven't read anything about this here. And, you know, I'm wondering when people are saying tax returns aren't being shown because of his tax rate, if it's not that, if it's this link that he could be going to jail. You know, he could be defending himself.
If he divulges his entire tax return, which shows that he actually was making money from contractors that were getting their money from Massachusetts while he was the governor of Massachusetts.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he made $13 million last year, which means he still owns a heck of a lot of companies, or
right.
at least, you know, Bain, a good chunk of Bain, which owns a lot of companies. So. But the thing that I found interesting, and I just, you know, it's not going to work. I mean, he's saying here's 20 years worth of tax returns, except that there's no tax returns. It's his summary
right.
of them. And what, you know, what does that mean? And still he's paying almost nothing in taxes. Dee, thank you for the call. It'd be interesting to see. We'll just have to wait and find out. Rick in Memphis, Tennessee. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, since you're interested in the possibility that Mitt Romney might think he's divinely inspired, something from the Internet you may also be interested in, seems that most Mormons think that Romney needs to be elected president so that he can be part of God's plan and initiate a war with Islam bring on the apocalypse and then the second coming of Jesus Christ. So what would you think of that as a possibility?
He actually believes it. I've talked to a number of ex-Mormons who are, you know, kind of talking about the Mormon faith in an academic context. And I've not heard anything like that. I've heard that, you know, I'm familiar with the White Horse Prophecy. So I know that sounds more like the Jerry Falwell stuff. I mean, there back when Reagan was elected, there was this very interesting dynamic going on because, you know, the prophecy in, I believe it's the seventh chapter of Revelation, about the beast and the whore, which would precede Armageddon, you know, the whore would have the mark of the horn of the beast on her forehead, and the beast would have a number, and the number is a name, and the number is 666. And so people were all upset about the fact that Reagan was dancing with Gorbachev. Gorbachev had this birthmark of a horn on his forehead, and there are six letters in the word Ronald, six letters in the word Wilson, and six letters in the word Reagan. And his old address when he lived in California was 666, whatever the name of the street was. They actually had the city council change the number of the street because it was spooking so many people. And, you know, so there was a lot of talk about Armageddon back then, you know, among the fundamentalists. But I haven't heard anything about it with regard to the Mormons. Do you know the name of a specific prophecy, or can you name a specific book, or is this just something that you've heard?
No, this is just the same prophecy that's been in the Bible since the beginning.
Yeah.
But a gentleman who said he was raised Mormon, very strict Mormon in Utah, went to Brigham Young University and no longer believed in the faith, and said he's releasing information that the Mormons make a point of not telling people about because they don't want people to know about the more controversial aspects of their beliefs.
Yeah. Like for example, that this planet was created by a man who was on another planet who became a god, and that every man, no women, and it used to be all, every white man, no African Americans. They let African Americans in the late 1970s or early 1980s, but every man on this planet has the potential, if they become a good Mormon, to become a god and have their own planet, like the god of this planet has his own planet.
Well, the thing that struck me very strongly was what seems like saber rattling with what Mitt Romney was saying at the Republican National Convention. Sounds like he and his vice president would welcome warfare in the Middle East, but people think it's definitely going to happen. So maybe Mitt does think he is divinely directed to do something like that.
Well, I'm increasingly genuinely believing what I was saying yesterday, which is that he does believe that he's an agent of destiny, that he's destined to be president, and that he's the fulfillment of Joseph Smith's White Horse Prophecy. I am increasingly believing that he believes that, and that that's one of the things that animates and motivates him. But with regard to the warfare thing, I think that there's a much more pedestrian and banal, frankly, explanation for that. And that is that he has surrounded himself with the foreign policy advisors of George W. Bush, the war hawks, you know, John Bolton and these guys, you know, who are none of them have ever been in the military. None of them have ever been at war. And they all just love the idea of sending our troops off to war. And that's, I think, that's the big problem that Mitt Romney has and why he was talking the way he was at the convention.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And does that mean, if we have a Romney presidency, that, like with George W. Bush, we're going to see a couple more trillion-dollar wars put on our credit card? I think it's entirely possible.
What do you say to your fellow Republicans who are,
stop it, this is hard, you want to try it, get in the ring. This is hard. Stop it.
Yes, that was Ann Romney saying, you know, after Peggy Noonan was trashing her husband, just stop it. I can just imagine her talking to her kids that way, but I'm not sure that that's how you should talk to the country. You quit criticizing my husband. You don't realize how hard it is to run for president. Well, I'm sure it is hard to run for president. In fact, I'm sure it's mind-bogglingly hard to run for president. But there's a reason why we make it so hard to run for president. Because we want to be sure that whoever is our president is not going to be saying in the midst of an international crisis, you know, as Libya or Iran or South Sudan or fill in the blank. I mean, it's North Korea, some country, not South Sudan, Northern Sudan, starts melting down. You don't want the presidency. You just stop that. You know, give me a couple of weeks to catch my breath here. Quit criticizing me. Right? It's not presidential. Evelyn in Henderson, North Carolina. Hey, Evelyn.
Yes. This is Evelyn. I don't know if I should give both my whole name.
No, your last name is not necessary. That's just fine. Evelyn.
Okay,
is just fine.
All right. Well, what I'm calling about is Grover Norquist.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he's some kind of lobbyist.
He's a multimillionaire lobbyist here in Washington, D.C., yep.
When he has managed to get nearly all the Republicans in Congress to sign pledges to never raise taxes.
Yes, Mitt Romney signed it too, and Paul Ryan.
And I have written a new Pledge of Allegiance for Republicans.
Okay.
And it goes like this. I pledge allegiance to Grover Norquist and to the plutocracy for which he stands. One Republican Party under Ronald Reagan with guns and ammo for all.
That's brilliant. Evelyn, you are absolutely brilliant.
And I have also written new words for America the Beautiful.
Oh, my.
Oh, beautiful for ozone skies, for parching fields of grain, for fracking mountains of natural gas, above the toxic plain.
Wow.
America, America, may God have mercy on thee. And don't privatize or corporatize from sea to Orleansy.
Evelyn, not only are you brilliant and creative, but you're also one very good singer. Thank you very much for that. And thanks.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling and sharing with us. That was very, very nice. Al in Las Vegas. Hey, Al, what's on your mind?
Natalie was great, wasn't she?
Yeah. Evelyn, she was great.
I got two very short questions for you.
Uh-huh.
The way the unemployment rates are stated on the news once a month at the end of every month,
right,
they always say the unemployment rate is 8.1, but the real unemployment rate is 16 or whatever it comes. Imagine if they had to announce that in the reverse order and say the real unemployment rate is 16%. Well, how could they follow that?
Well, the problem is that there's these different. There are U1, U2, U3, U4, U5. I think there's six of them all together.
But imagine if they had to announce it.
And the rate that the Republicans are using, the 23 million people, that includes well over 10 or 15 million people who actually are employed, do have jobs. They're just not the jobs that they want, and they're part-time jobs and they want a full-time job. They're underemployed or employed in professions that they were not trained for. And that's technically a form of unemployment, and the Republicans are using it constantly. But really, the number of people who actually don't have a job, and are looking for a job is 8.1%. If you include the people who don't have a job and have run out of unemployment benefits and are technically no longer looking for jobs, I think it's like something like 11 or 12%. And then when you include the underemployed, it gets up around the 16%, if I'm remembering my numbers right, and I may well not be. But Al, I'm with you. I think we should, always be using the reverse numbers because they reflect what's really going on in the United States. It's, and by the way, let's also point out that the stock market is hitting all-time highs now. It's bumping up against 14,000, which is where it was just before the last crash, and that's got a lot of people spooked. What's going to happen when that happens? And we'll see. But what that means is that the investor class, Mitt Romney, all of his income is from investments, so he pays a maximum 15% income tax. That's why he's paying 13%. It would be 12% if he did take his charitable deductions, which he didn't take apparently last year. It's just bizarre. Sam in Houston, Texas. Hey, Sam, we have a minute to the break. A quick one?
Okay, yeah, real quick. The Paul Ryan video of him getting booed sounds eerily familiar, like the Mitt Romney getting booed at the NAACP. And if I recall correctly, Mitt Romney told the NAACP if they want free stuff, then vote for Obama. I wonder if he's going to tell the AARP that.
Right, that's an interesting point, because the next day after Romney got booed at the NAACP, he gave a speech to an all-white audience that was like, you know, one of the military groups or hunting groups or something like that. And he said, you know, yesterday I talked to a bunch of people who want free government benefits, or words to that effect. And I wonder if tomorrow Paul Ryan is going to go out and say, you know, yesterday I was talking to a bunch of freeloaders who are retired. And, they, you know, they want more of our tax dollars or something. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays. Sam, thanks for pointing that out. I'd completely forgotten, or not completely forgotten, but, you know, in the context of Paul Ryan, I think it's an important juxtaposition. Well done. Thank you, Sam. We'll be back. It's 28 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain, but does not lead to stiff thinking. And don't let Limbaugh know, because he'll want some.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman with you, back with Anything Goes Friday right after this. Past the hour, Tom Harbin with you. Breaking news, apparently Ann Romney's plane made an emergency landing, this according to CNN, in Colorado today. Apparently all is well. You know, I wish her well. I would never wish ill health, ill anything, you know, on particularly somebody running for president or the spouse of somebody running for president. Although I continue to think that her comments about just stop it, we're a little over the top. Paul in Fairland, Oklahoma. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Hey, yeah, good afternoon, Tom.
Hey,
you know, listen to Bernie Sanders and saying he has 22 other senators going to go along with his plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got to do something. We need all the senators standing up with Bernie, not just 22, all of them.
Yeah.
And we need to let them know that they can be primaries. If they're not going to stand up for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, they can be primary.
Well, you're in Oklahoma. You've got Dr. No representing you, Tom Coburn. So,
idiot.
Yeah.
he should be in jail for treason.
You know, that's not going to happen. But what could happen, I think he's up for re-election in 2 years, isn't he?
Yeah, but I think he's going to retire.
Yeah, you're probably right. You may well be right. But
he's going to go be a lobbyist.
Yeah, and then cash in, because a senator,
anyway,
when they retire, can make $3 million a year.
I'm a senior, and I can call long distance for free.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna start calling every senator, congressman I can, and I'm going to, you know, blast them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is our livelihood, our kids' livelihood.
Yep.
And, you know, they're going to destroy. They're destroying democracy in this country.
I agree.
And another thing,
Bernie was so right in saying that when you call a member of Congress, when you call their office, particularly if you live in their state, but even if you don't, particularly if they're in the leadership, you know, if they're on any committee or anything, you can say, well, you're the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, and I don't understand why, or, you know, you're on the Armed Services Committee, I don't understand why you voted against the Veterans Bill, that kind of thing, then they actually pay attention. They take those calls seriously. They keep track of them, and it, over time, it will influence how they behave.
And I would encourage all your listeners to do the same thing.
Yep.
Right into their newspapers.
Oh, yeah. Letters to the editor in the local newspapers just terrify these guys.
There's an ad running now, bashing Obama, for, you know, reelect Romney, call this number,
right,
and sign this petition. We need 20 million people. So I called it. And guess what? They let you talk.
Yeah.
And boy, did I blast them.
Was it an 800 number?
Yes, it is.
Okay, let me tell you why they want you to call that 800 number. When you call an 800 number, the the phone bill that you get for your 800 number, because I, you know, for example, you called me on an 800 number, so I'm paying about 4 cents a minute for everybody who's calling in, and all the time they're on hold and everything, it's costing me. And because I'm paying for that call, your phone number shows up on my phone bill. So we don't do anything with those. I mean, we just, they're there, right? But every month we get a phone bill that's like 25 pages long, and it's got the phone number of everybody who called us, when they called, how long they were on hold, or how long the call was. And so this is why in these political ads they will give an 800 number, is because now they have your phone number, now they can telemarket to you, and they can sell your phone number. Again, we don't do this, but and they can sell your phone number to other people now that they've got it. So be careful. Be careful of that. And the other thing to be careful of, even more importantly, is the people who are trying to get you to give you their cell phone number. And usually they do things like, well, let's have a poll, or let's have a, you know, a quiz, or here, call, you know, text this to this cell phone number, you know, text, you know, yes to, or, you know, Ralph or whatever to 31522 or something like that. And when you do that, they now have your cell phone number. And you can sell a regular phone number for, you know, 10, 20 cents, something like that. And you can sell it a few hundred times, a few thousand times maybe. But you can sell a cell phone number for $1 or $2 in the market. They're much more valuable. And so these people are aggregating cell phone numbers, and then they're selling them to telemarketers. So well, be careful, you know, Paul. Be careful.
If they want to use that against me, then call me. Let them call me. I'll blast them.
I'm sure you would. Paul, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. Mary in Bernie, Texas. Hey, Mary, what's on your mind?
Well, I was wondering, Tom, one thing I want to ask, without the education, I mean, what makes you so smart? You're the smartest man I know.
Well, there are a lot of areas where I'm really dumb, Mary. What I'm doing is I'm talking about the things I know about, and so that makes me sound smart. But if I were to try to talk about things I don't know about, you'd discover.
I tell
discover.
You what, I swear by what you say.
Okay, well, thank you. I do know a fair amount about politics and some about economics and history, and it's all largely self-taught, so...
Oh, man, you must have a memory like a...
Thank you. But what did you call about beyond that?
Well, I wanted to ask, do you know what happened to the money that the post office has paid in for the retirement that Bush has made them do?
Yes.
It's hurting so bad.
Yes. That money is a surplus in the retirement fund. Right now they've got a fund that I believe has something like $40 billion in it. For people who don't know what you're talking about, and this is a really important point, back in 2006, the post office was doing so well and showing such a profit. You know, it had been semi-privatized. It's a semi-autonomous function of government. It's still a government agency. And they are the largest unionized employer in the United States, and, you know, the postal workers. And so the Bush administration, the Republicans, wanted to do something to ruin the post office. And of course, you've got also the, you know, FedEx and UPS and all these other package carriers who have been lobbying against the post office for forever. And I don't know specifically if it's which of those companies and how, but, you know, I know that there's a lot of anti-post office lobbying going on. And so what they did was they passed a law saying that the post office had to fund the retirement health benefits of all of their employees 75 years out. So, you know, somebody who is going to be born 15, 20, 30 years from now, 40, 50 years from now, the post office had to set aside money to pay for that person's retirement health benefits now. Now, no other government agency in history has been asked to fund the retirement of people who are not yet even born. No other company in history has ever been asked to or even tried to fund the benefits of people who haven't even been born. But the post office was forced to. It cost them $5 or $6 billion a year that they had to start putting into this fund starting in 2006. And that 2000, you know, that's been what, 7 years? And so 7 times 5 is 35. So there's in the neighborhood, my recollection was it was $42 billion. So maybe it's a little more than $5 billion. But there's between $30 and $40 billion surplus in that pension fund in the post office that the post office has that, or in the pension retirement fund that they can't use for anything else, and that's why the post office is in a crisis, and you know, because the Republicans basically threw them into a disaster. Make sense, Mary?
Yes, it okay. does. I had never heard of it. I tried to find. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you very much for the call. And let me add, the main reason why the Republicans wanted to do this is because you have between 600,000 and 700,000 people working for the post office. They're the second largest employer in the United States behind Walmart. Walmart is not unionized. So you've got 700,000 unionized workers. And the Republicans look at unions, you know, the way some people look at spiders or snakes. I mean, it's like, holy cow. And they fear them and they hate them. And so this was a way to break up the unions, to break up the postal union, break up the post office, and create more opportunities for profit. So, tragically. Mike in Vienna, Virginia. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Oh, yes. I was calling with regards to Romney's returns here. I saw that 39% of his contributions for both tax and charitable contributions, 39% of his income was contributed to those two items. And it seems like, you know, he's just released his taxes. And it seems more like a political strategy, just like the Obama campaign waited for his, you know, birth announcement there, shall we say.
His birth announcement.
Seems like both parties.
Obama had released his birth certificate long ago. You're talking about when he came out with a long form one at the correspondence dinner to shove it in Donald Trump's face. That was not like, you know, something's coming up on an election. That was just a joke. I mean, the whole birth certificate thing is a joke, and everybody knows it.
Yeah,
Romney did not donate 39% or anything close to that. The taxes that he paid were a little over 13% because he once gave an interview, and this is a really pretty amazing thing. This is from TPM, but it was an interview with ABC News in July of this year, and he said, and I quote, he had said that. Where is it? Right. I don't pay more than our legally due. And frankly, if I paid more than our legally due, I don't think I'd be qualified to become president. I think people would want me to follow the law and pay only what the tax code requires. And yet, in 2011, he donated $1.5 million, more or less, to the Latter-day Saints Church, to the Mormon Church, and did not take a deduction on his income taxes. If he had, his income tax rate would have dropped from 13% down to 11%. And he's trying to say that he's never paid less than 13%. And frankly, I mean, you know, if the Buffett rule was in place, where billionaires and multimillionaires like Mitt Romney have to pay at least what their secretaries pay, Mitt Romney's secretary could pay a maximum of 36%. So, you know, Romney would have had to pay 36% instead of 13%. But instead, we've got this special maximum 15% tax rate for millionaires, billionaires, and Paris Hilton. I think it's just crazy. I think it's wrong.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Of course, I'm not a millionaire, I'm not a billionaire, and I don't make my money sitting on my butt waiting for the dividend checks to arrive. So it's easy for me to say, I suppose, but still I think it's wrong.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
My dad, who played the trumpet when he was a teenager, that was his favorite song, Louis Armstrong, one of his favorite people. Thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, our associate producer, Shane Farnan, our video director, Jim Javinsky, to phone screeners, Paul Edney and Danielle Gilday, to writer-researcher, Sam Sachs, to Alva Goldbook for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, everyone at the various companies who syndicate this program, Dial Global on commercial stations nationwide, Pacifica Radio on non-commercial stations across the United States, Europe, and Africa, the Free Speech TV Network on Dish Network, DirecTV, all the cable providers who carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, all the others around the country, to the folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, to our newsletter editor and chat room queen. Yeah. Did I say king? No, maybe queen. Sue Nethercutt. And the folks in our chat room, hey, to Ellen Ratner and Victoria Jones and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and especially to you for supporting our program. supporting our sponsors, supporting our stations. Thank you so much. Let them know that you're listening. It is appreciated. It is genuinely appreciated. So, let's see here. Alan in Prescott, Michigan. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind?
Yeah, there's a form on the IRS.gov website.
Right.
For reporting people that evade taxes.
Right. You can make a bounty from it.
Or you can do it anonymously, and I think I've been trying to spread it on my Twitter feed. Just, I think there's enough information, especially from the experts, that he's been bending about every law there is.
Oh, so you want to report Mitt Romney to the IRS?
I just think everybody should report him, either put their name down or anonymously. And within 90 to 120 days, you're supposed to start an investigation because his tax return, it basically stinks.
Yeah. Yeah, well, his tax return, we don't know, actually, because he won't let us see them. He's just going to give us a letter that summarizes 20 years' worth of them, and I don't think anybody's believing it. Thanks a lot for the call, Alan. Nicholas in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Hey, Nicholas, what's up?
Not much. I just wanted to start off by saying I'm for Obama's increase of the taxes, but I'm wondering, how does he plan to account for the cost of living? Because if I understand it correctly, it's the 5% gets raised, the top 5%, a certain amount, and then 1% raised even more amount. But cost of living in Louisiana is much different than California, and I'm wondering how he plans to, what would be the plan to account for that cost?
Well, the only proposal that President Obama, the two proposals that President Obama has made is one, has to do with Social Security, and he made this back in the campaign of 2008. He hasn't made it as president. I would like to see him make it. And that is that if you earn up to $110,000 in the United States right now as salary, if you earn up to $110,000, any kind of payment, you know, wages, you pay 6.2%, I believe, is the amount of your income into the Social Security Trust Fund or in, you know, into FICA, in the payroll tax, Social Security, Medicare, things like that. And after that $110,000, after the first $110,000, if like Mitt Romney, you earned $13 million last year, $12,890,000 of your income is not taxed at all for Social Security purposes. You don't pay that 6.2%. So what, and in fact, since Mitt Romney is calling all of that income capital gains, he's not paying, you know, Social Security tax on any of it, but set that aside for a moment. So what President Obama has said is, okay, stop paying at $110,000. You have a donut hole from $110,000 to $250,000 where you pay no Social Security tax. Isn't that great for everybody making $110,000 to $250,000? And then after you make that, when you start earning $250,000, that 6.2% kicks in again all the way up to Mitt Romney's $13 million or whatever it may be. The Koch brother, you know, one of the guys on Wall Street making $1 billion. That would make Social Security solvent. That was the first thing he suggested. And then the second thing he suggested was, we have this bizarre tax code that says if you earn your living working, you know, the guy who did surgery on me or on my wife, the if you're a rocket scientist, mm-hmm. if you're a talk show host, if you're a longshoreman, your top tax rate is 36%. But if you earn your living by moving money around, Mitt Romney does, if you're a bankster, your top tax, and this is just for banksters, right? Your top tax rate is 15%, and you don't have to pay Social Security taxes. And I think that's wrong, and Warren Buffett thinks that's wrong, who, you know, earns 10, 20. He's a multi-billionaire. And so Buffett suggested, and Obama suggested, and it proposed to Congress, actually. This was introduced into Congress, and it was shot down by the Republicans, of course, what was called the Buffett rule, which says that if you're a millionaire, a billionaire like Mitt Romney, you have to at least pay a minimum tax. And he didn't even propose that it be the 36% that the secretaries are paying if they're well paid, you know, if they're making, you know, over a couple $100,000. He suggested that it only be 30%. So, but Romney's tax rate would have gone from 15% up to 30%. And I think that that's a good and healthy thing. And you know, it would take us back to a time when we had enough tax income that we could afford to maintain our roads and our bridges in this country. I mean, you know, we sent a man to the moon. We can't afford to have a space shuttle anymore. What happened? The rich people got us. They screwed us. And you know, now they own enough of Congress that they can continue that. So to the best of my knowledge, those are the only two tax increases that Obama has proposed. Neither one has passed because, you know, Congress has bought and sold. Nicholas, thanks a lot for the call. Say that. Oh, only 2 seconds until the show. Armin, I just have to say hi to you. I'm sorry. We're hitting the end of the show. My apologies.
Oh, I thought some good stuff.
I thought I had another minute, but you hang on to that good stuff, Armin. I promise we'll put you on the air next week. Anyhow, thanks so much for being with us today. And coming up next on the Tom Hartman program, we'll have the latest news and information from the campaign trail. Plus, Mitt Romney releases his 2011 tax returns. This is going to be interesting. We'll have the weekend to check this stuff out. And we'll be back here on Monday. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Ain't enough to just vote. Show up. Participate. Movement politics is where it's at. Get out there. Get active. Tag. You're it. See you Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.